You are listening to episode number 82 of the Secondary Science Simplified podcast. Long time no see. For the first time ever, I'm trying out double episodes all month long for July. So I will be popping up in your podcast player if you follow me on Monday and Thursday every week this month. And my goal in this is really just to support you as you work through each action step in each part of the curriculum design process. Because here's the deal, like, people have asked me for years and years to share how I do this, and it's a lot. Like, I get it. I get that it's a lot. And so I'm trying to do this in the least overwhelming and the most manageable way. So we're splitting it up into five parts, and we've covered the first two so far. And then I'm hoping to use these Thursday episodes as just a little way to provide you some more support if you're feeling overwhelmed. Okay, so that's our goal for today. More support and more context and more examples for parts one and two of the process that we've covered so far. Are you ready for it? Let's get into it then. This is Secondary Science Simplified, a podcast for secondary science teachers who want to engage their students and simplify their lives. I'm Rebecca Joyner from It's Not Rocket Science. As a high school science teacher turned curriculum writer, I am passionate about helping other science teachers love their jobs, serve their students, and do it all in only 40 hours a week. Are you ready to rock the time you spend in your classroom and actually have a life outside of it? You are in the right place, teacher friend. Let's get to today's episode. Okay, so you're here because you have maybe started the curriculum design process with me. You've attempted parts one and two, and you're like, ooh, I could use a little bit more help and a little bit more, just maybe some more examples to help you really understand how this all kind of fleshes out. Because again, this is really a holistic approach that I take to writing curriculum, and I'm looking at the whole big picture. And sometimes if you've never done this before, you're like, it's hard for me to see the big picture when I don't even really know what it all looks like put together. Okay, so what my hope is with these Thursday episodes that are going to be the extra supportive episodes is I'm just going to give you more examples of what this kind of looks like as a finished product. And so I'm going to do that by each week, just kind of picking one of my already existing curricula and referencing that in all of the examples from it. And so for this week, I'm going to be using my biology curriculum as an example as I walk through parts one and two and kind of how I did parts one and two and how those kind of played out in that curriculum. So I'm not trying to sell you this curriculum because I know that it's not for everyone, and that's okay. I do my best to serve as many teachers as possible, but at the end of the day, some teachers prefer to write their own curriculum, and that's totally fine. And that's why this series exists, to serve you and equip you in doing that. But I also know others of you, you want to write one or two curricula, you want some ready-made curriculum, that's fine too. If you want to know if this is the right fit for you or not, I will link a blog post in the show notes that's all about like what the curriculum is about and who it's best for. And then I'll also link a little YouTube video tour so you can see what's inside if you're a visual person. But really, for the sake of this content, I want to just use it as a reference point for practical implementation that will serve anyone listening. Okay, so far in our curriculum design process, we've covered strategizing your sequence and analyzing your aims. That's what we did in episodes 80 and 81. So if you have not listened to those, you absolutely need to do that first. Okay. Now, from here, I'm just going to give you more examples to support you if you're struggling to take action. So first, let's go back all the way to part one, episode 80, strategizing your sequence. I asked you to think through 10 questions, and I'm going to kind of give you some of my answers that I use specifically for biology. So first question was, what are overall themes do I want to thread throughout my course? In biology, I really thought about it, and I was like, you know what? Proteins are everything. I could argue that everything in biology comes back to proteins. And if you want to make it even more broad, macromolecules. And so this led me to being like, macromolecules must be first. And then every single unit is going to tie back to macromolecules. Like in cells, when we're learning the organelles, we're going to tie them back to the macromolecules. When we're learning about biochemical reactions, we're going to tie them back to macromolecules. Carbohydrates, you know, we're making glucose, that's a carb. Enzymes are proteins, you know, genetics and heredity, all goes back to macromolecules, proteins and nucleic acids. Okay, so we're going to bring everything back to that. That's how that theme informed my decision to teach macromolecules first. Okay, so that's what I'm kind of going to be doing here. I'm going to give you examples of my answers and how those have informed my choices, okay? The second question I asked y'all to think about was, what are the hardest topics traditionally for students? And I kind of already mentioned this and what it could be paired with. I said food webs and trophic pyramids, pairing them with biochemical reactions because those are hard and it gets you the macro and the micro together. But another thing to think through too is, again, macromolecules tend to be a hard topic for students. It can be one of those things that students are like, I'm just like not going to worry about this. It feels like a lot of memorization. And so then they don't, but then they struggle the rest of the year. Macromolecules tie into literally every topic. So that's why that also informed my decision to make it first. Make it really matter to them so they could see like, you need to learn these because it's going to come up for the rest of the year. Okay. Another question, number three, was what are the hardest times of year? I told y'all I have a lot of energy at the beginning of the year. I have a lot of back to school energy. So I like to start with harder topics. That's why I tend to teach micro to macro. Let's start harder while I have a lot of energy. I have a lot of patience. I'm like ready to do after school tutoring at the beginning of the year. Come March, April, it starts warming up. I do not want to be in my classroom an extra second. So I save those macro topics that tend to be easier for students for the end of the year. Again, that's just specific to me. But again, this is more backstory, more examples for you to hopefully help you. The fourth question was, does it make more sense to go macro to micro or micro to macro? Again, like I said, I tend to go micro macro, but I do pair some macro topics early on with micro just to make it easier. And another thing that I didn't mention in the episode on this, but I think is worth thinking about is if you have an EOC, think about the end of the year. And if you start running out of time, and what would be the easiest unit that you could scrunch in to like 2 days if you had to? Okay, so one thing I typically see in biology is a lot of people teach ecology first because it gets students excited about biology. It kind of ties everything together, so it's a nice one to start with first. Totally understand that. Here's my thing. If you start with ecology, I bet that you most likely then end with evolution. And if you end with evolution, think about those years when you start running out of time and you get to the end and you're like, oh my gosh, we have 1 week left. I haven't even mentioned evolution yet before the EOC exam. I would argue with just about anyone that you can't do evolution justice in 2 days, but you can do ecology justice in 2 days. And I know all the ecologists out there listening to this are like, you just committed the cardinal sin by saying that, Rebecca. How dare you try to cover ecology in 2 days? I get it. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying my students that I've taught over the years have the most background knowledge on ecology. It's the most familiar to them. It is the one that just comes most logically to them. Whereas evolution, they have so many preconceived misconceptions that I got to bust through to get them to help them understand it so that they can answer questions about it and apply it. Because so many things that their inherent rationality about it doesn't match the data that's out there, and thus they have a really hard time answering the questions. Students think organisms evolve, and that is completely false. Populations do. These are the kinds of things we need more than 48 hours to bust through, okay? So that's my opinion on that. That's where I've been really strategic with my scope and sequence of thinking, worst case scenario, if I start running out of time at the end of the year, I want ecology last so I can zoom through it, and I don't want evolution last because we can run out of time, okay? Again, not saying this is the choice you have to make. This is how I rationalize my choices for my sequence. All right, question five. Are there any units that have to be taught in a certain sequence? For me, looking at biology again, because I'm using biology for this entire episode as an example, I really feel like students have to know about DNA and meiosis before they can understand heredity. It just doesn't make sense. Okay, so when I'm thinking about my sequence, those got to go first. Question six. Are there any units or concepts within units that might make more sense taught in a different order? Y'all, I'm going to do my best here not to go on a tangent. You know what? I'm not going to let myself do it. I'm going to link in the show notes a blog where I have articulated my tangent on this, but here it is. Stop teaching mitosis and meiosis together. Why? Why do we teach mitosis and meiosis together? Most likely it's because that's how the textbook did it. And you're like, oh, they're already learning about prophase. So we'll just teach them about prophase one and prophase two at the same time. What? That's so confusing. Why would we teach them three different types of prophase? It doesn't make sense for mitosis and meiosis to be taught in sequence. They are not processes that happen in sequence. They happen in different cells at different times. Like, let's teach them in context. Okay, let's teach mitosis when we're learning about parts of the cell and they're learning about like how we grow from like one cell to many cells and they differentiate. Let's teach meiosis later when we are getting into the genetics and stuff and we're talking about baby making. Okay, please, if there's anything, you know, my life's work on the internet is writing these curricula. Okay, but if I could pick a secondary life's work, it would be my mission to get teachers to stop teaching mitosis and meiosis together. I'm like so passionate about this. I said I wasn't going to go on a tangent and then here I go. I'm really sorry. I hope I didn't offend you. Actually, I hope I did offend you because maybe if you're offended, you'll think about doing this differently for the sake of your students. Now, if you want my fully written out argument on this, my CER, my claim, my evidence statements, backed up with reasoning, head to the link in the show notes, okay? All right, I digress. I said this was going to be a short one and then here I go on a 5-minute tangent about this. Okay. Question 7, what units best lend themselves to spring weather, getting students outside? Again, this is another reason why I like ecology at the end of the year. I can do a lot of outdoor things with ecology. Okay, 8, what units naturally have fun projects in them that'd be great for the end of the year? Again, ecology, so many great projects. Love to do it at the end of the year. They're also easy to shorten at the end of the year if we need to. It's great because like if you have an EOC and so you're like, I don't want to do a final exam because I have an EOC, but your school's like, you have to have a final exam. And you're like, goodness gracious, do one of these ecology projects and you're good to go. Okay. Question 9, which unit in my course best ties all the units together? Again, I've recommended this be the first or the last unit. This is what led me to make my decision to do macromolecules first. I think macromolecules ties everything together, but it's too challenging of a topic to teach at the end of the year. It makes a lot of sense at the beginning of the year. I love starting off in macromolecules. And then last but not least, is the sequence I'm using really effective or are there changes I can make to improve it? What I was doing wasn't effective. And so when I got a new job at a private school that was basically like, YOLO, you do you, we trust you. I was like, sweet, I'm going to change this up and do what I think makes the most sense. And I really just walked through these 9 questions in my own head. And that's what led me to make the decisions I made for my biology sequence, which was the first curriculum I ever wrote. I've gone back and updated it, done a huge revamp in 2020 of it because obviously the first time I wrote a curriculum, I didn't really know how to make it look nice and serve the most people. But that has been revamped and it's really informed though the process I've taken since then for every subsequent curriculum that I've written in determining the sequence and really thinking through those questions. So I really want to challenge you to do that. Now let's talk about episode 81, which is all about analyzing your aims. This is where I challenged you to translate your standards you have into practical objectives. And so I feel like I really walked through clearly what to do with that. So for this kind of like just supportive episode, I just want to encourage you why you need to do it a little bit more, just to hopefully motivate you and spur you on, because I know it's not the, again, it's not the most fun of the parts of this process. Here's the thing. If you do this well, and you do it really simply, and you make those objectives really clear, this list of your practical objectives and your key vocabulary that you've translated from your standards, it becomes your unit overview, and it becomes your study guide for your end of unit assessment. Okay, I will link in the show notes a blog post where I kind of share my whole philosophy about study guides and how I do them in my class. But basically, the cover page of my units, I give my students packets. It's an instructional resource I find really effective to keep students organized to support my holistic approach for curriculum design. And yeah, I just like them. I'll link a whole thing on that too. I've got a podcast episode on it as well. But I do a cover page for each unit. And on the cover page, I divide the unit into 3 to 6 concepts. And then under each concept, I list out those practical objectives and the key vocabulary that came from me walking through this process of analyzing my aims, of reading my standards and writing these out. And again, the beauty in this is when you're doing it holistically, you're doing all of it all together, all at once. And when you do this, it's going to help us with parts 3 through 5 that are coming later because we're going to align everything we cover in the remainder of this process back to this. If you do this step really, really well, everything's going to come back to one of those 3 themes you picked in part 1. Everything that's assessed is going to be taught and reinforced really well. Students are going to know your expectations from day 1 of the unit so that they can prepare for whatever that end of unit assessment looks like. You will not be hearing again that you never taught me this, okay? You're not going to hear it, which we'll talk about more in part 5. And here's like a very real example of this. I mentioned this in a previous episode, but like y'all, when I was thrown AP Bio, it was prep number 5. I was overwhelmed. It was my first time teaching it. I had to give up another. I actually had 5 preps before that, but it was stuff I'd already taught. I had to give up one of those preps to another teacher who had never taught the subject I gave him. So then I was kind of helping him with that. I was taking on AP Bio. I was mentoring a different teacher in the English department who was a new teacher who needed some support, and they paired me with her. We were walking through the adoption process. I had a lot going on in my personal life. There was a lot going on. Now, I will admit, those of you who have children, you might be being like, well, you had no kids. And you're right. It is a different animal when you have other humans that you're responsible for caring for. I can't imagine what that would have been like trying to tackle that with children in my home like I have now. But I just want to say we did feel like we had a lot going on. And I just felt like I was drowning in AP Bio. I was lucky if I was getting a week ahead in like what I was planning. And there would be times, y'all, where we had a test on a Tuesday and Monday night I'm writing the test. Have y'all been there? It's midnight. I'm writing the test and then I'm going back and reviewing it. I'm having to like delete questions because I'm like, I don't think I even really covered that very much. Or like, I barely mentioned that. I can't ask him a test question on this. And it makes it very challenging for your students. And so this is why I love this process. If you're thinking through and analyzing your aims by writing out these objectives in this vocab and then giving it to your students at the start of the unit, then the expectations are so, so clear. You're going to make all of your instructional resources from this cover page. You're going to write all your assessments from this cover page. It's going to serve you and your students so much. So if you take the time and do this step really, really well, I think it's going to change your prep life, okay? And it's definitely going to be critical for this curriculum design process. And again, I'm going to link all that stuff in the show notes. If you want to hear more about the packets I reference or the study guides I reference, I've got a lot of resources I've already talked about and written on those things. And so I'll link those in the show notes for more context for you. So here's your action step for this episode. Go back with an editing eye and go through what you've already done for parts 1 and 2, your sequence skeleton, and then your translation of your standards. And really just note your gaps and tighten those up. Tighten up any objectives. Look at what you've written and look at it through the lens of this being like a study guide for a unit test that you would hand to your students. And I think using that perspective will really help you clarify your language and really sharpen up your objectives. Okay. And then once you feel good about that, I'll see you back here Monday and we'll dive into part 3, which I promise part 3 of this process will be a lot more fun. Okay. So if you want any of those links I mentioned, if you want to hear more about my mitosis meiosis tangent, you can go to itsonrocketscienceclassroom.com/episode82 and those are all there for you. And again, I just want to encourage you before I let you go. I know that this is a lot. Trust me. I literally do this for a living now. And when I'm doing this part of the process and analyzing aims, I'm not just reading one set of standards. I'm reading a set of standards from every single state in the United States so that I can try to serve as many teachers as possible. So when I did this part 2 for the chemistry curriculum I'm writing, I think I spent a month, maybe it was 6 or 7 weeks even, doing just this, analyzing the aims. I ended up with a 77-page long Word doc with all of my notes because again, I was doing this like 50 times. So I just want to encourage you that I understand it's a lot, but it's going to be so, so worth it. And if you are having trouble just remembering to listen to the podcast or maybe you're just now diving in, you're feeling behind, like you're listening to this in August and when this came out, you know, early July, don't feel behind. You are right on time. Even if this is months down the road, like it is never too late to start doing this. And if you're like, it's too far into the school year, okay, maybe start thinking through this for the next school year then and working on this on a slower pace. I really think it'll still serve future you. But if you want something to help you practically so you actually like remember to listen to these episodes, follow the show. That is the best way to make sure that you don't miss a new episode is by following it in your podcast player and then they'll automatically download for you each week. That's all you have to do. And I'll be excited to see you guys back here next week. All right, teacher friends, that wraps up today's episode. If you're looking for an easy way to start simplifying your life as a secondary science teacher, head to itsnotrocketscienceclassroom.com/challenge to grab your classroom reset challenge. And guess what? It's totally free. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I'll see you here next week. Until then, I'll be rooting for you, teacher friend.